most intense, thrilling, electrifying sport on the planet. Mixed Martial Arts. You've been looking for the definitive podcast to call your new home to hear everything about it. The search is over. This is the MMA Knowledge Show. No filter. Bringing you the hottest MMA breakdowns straight from the heart of the octagon. This show is all about MMA breakdowns. For fans, by fans. We're talking UFC, MMA, and the occasional big boxing match. We'll bring our unique take on how these fights are going to play out and who we think are the best bets. Welcome to the MMA Anomaly Show. No filter. And now your hosts, Olin, a.k.a. MMA Anomaly, and Emiliano, a.k.a. Jive Turkey Nano.
What is up, fight fans? Welcome back to another episode of the MMA Anomaly Show. No filter. I'm your host, Olin, a.k.a. MMA Anomaly. And with me, as always, is the co-host with the most, Jive Turkey Nano. How we doing, my guy? You look like you're feeling a rare energy today.
Let's go. I'm energized as can be. Great to see you, brother. I'm doing fantastic. It's Thursday, Friday, Junior. We're taking a quick trip to Des Moines, Iowa. So, you know, I got to rep my Cali because we stay repping Cali as always.
Stay repping Cali.
Can't wait, brother. This is a low-key banger of a card, ladies and gentlemen. So thank y'all for tuning in. I can't wait, man. I can't wait.
Very excited, man. Very excited indeed. And I mean, this fight card is definitely another really solid free one, right? It is not a pay-per-view. We have a pay-per-view coming up after this one in just a week. Coming up, of course, in the form of UFC 315 on May 10th. But I digress. May 3rd. Presents a slew of very fun fights, starting off in the women's flyweight division in a bout between Juliana Killer Miller and Ivana Petrovic. This should be a fun card opener. Is it going to be the greatest fight of all time? I don't know, maybe not. But I do think it promises to be a good time, folks. And shout out Capitan Rafucho, Raf in the building. How we doing, my friend? Hope you're having a great Thursday night. Or as we like to call it, Friday Junior. Nano, I'm going to let you take the lead on this one, my guy. But first, John Jones is a good person says, hello, everyone. Hello, John Jones is a good person. We appreciate having you here.
Hello. Someone's going to clip that of you saying all. Just so you know, you're going to go viral.
Yeah. John Jones is a good person. Great handle.
Your mouth. I never thought that sentence would leave your mouth, but here we are. Great to have you, John Jones. Is a good person. We see you.
And we got Let's go. We appreciate you, my friend. We appreciate you. Get this man some air horns, huh? Nano, tell the people, what are your thoughts on this card opener between Juliana Killer Miller and Ivana Petrovic?
It's an interesting one, right? Juliana Killer Miller, someone we have grown to be familiar with. You might have remembered her on her days on The Ultimate Fighter, but she's been on a really tough streak lately, right? The last couple of years have not been in her favor, coming off back-to-back losses, one against a Veronica Hardy, who we all know is an absolute stud. You know, she's got that fighter IQ, can't necessarily hold that against her. And then she goes out there and just gets another bad knockout against a really tough opponent in Luana Carolina. I mean, again, I throw my hands up because it's like, what are you going to do? You know, you win some, you lose some. That shouldn't take away anything from Juliana Killer Miller, but still just so young in her career, right? I mean, the 3-3 record kind of scares me a little bit. In fact, that might be the least amount of fights I've seen in quite some time for someone that I've known, feel like I've seen for a while. All to say, this can't bet on her this time. You know, she's the underdog. As much as I want to root for the underdogs, you know, we like our dogs around here. I'm going to go with the Ben favorite in Ivana Petrovic. I think she just has enough of the tools. Yes, she is also coming off a loss, but that was a split decision against a tough Jamie Lynn Horth. Before that, she was able to secure a arm triangle choke on a Na Liang. So I like what I'm saying. Actually, they both lost to Luana, oddly enough. But with that being said, I'm going with the Russian or the Croatian sensation in Ivana Petrovic to get it done. What you think, brother? Are we in the same boat or are you going to ride out the underdog and Juliana Miller?
You know, I mean, first and foremost, great breakdown, my guy. I like Juliana Miller, but like you said, she's had a tough run of things, right? It's a clash between two grapplers, in my opinion, with very different styles, right? We all know Miller from Tough, like you said, a Tough 30 winner. She's a bit wild and scrappy, pretty relentless on the mat when she's able to get there. But like you said, she's coming off a tough run, handful of tough losses. That always brings a lot of pressure, like a wounded animal in the corner, right? It brings almost a sense of unpredictability to what they're bringing to the cage, in my opinion. On the other side, you've got Petrovic, who is a composed, methodical grappler, has that Norwegian power, uses control and positioning over chaos. She dropped her UFC debut, but her clinch work and cage IQ definitely showed promise even then. Stylistically, it's a scrambler versus a controller style matchup. If Miller can make this sloppy and messy and hunt for subs within the chaos, I think she can possibly find a path to victory here. But let's be honest, if they fight 10 times, she probably wins once. And I'm not willing to bet on this one. So I'm just going to stay away from this one from a betting perspective and enjoy it from a fan perspective. I do think it's going to be a chaotic, delightful fight for as long as it lasts. Like I said, Juliana Miller, win or lose, I feel like is always a fun time out there in the cage. And speaking of not betting on a fight, we find ourselves moving next into the heavyweight division to witness a fight between Thomas Peterson and Dontell Mays, which if you've ever tuned into the show when Dontell Mays is fighting, you know, on the MMA Anomaly show, we don't bet. We don't bet on a Dontell Mays fight. We don't. We bet for him, he loses. We bet against him, he wins. So we're just not doing it. We're not doing it, man. How do I think this fight goes? It's tough. It's a toss-up, right? Thomas the Train Peterson is 9-3. He gets most of his wins by way of knockout or TKO, 78% of them to be exact. One win by decision, one win by submission. Coming off of a loss to Shamil O'Neil Gaziev via right hook Ricky in the first round, 3:12 in. But he also beat Muhammad Usman before that via unanimous decision. He made it look rather easy, to be honest with you. Before that, he lost to Jamal Pokes. So he's a bit of an up and downer. But hey, if the trend continues, this should be a win for him. So, I mean, who's my money on if I were to bet on this one, which I'm not because it's a Dontell Mays fight? I would probably bet Peterson. I would lean him very, very heavy here. I think he's live to go out there and get a finish, but he's more likely to go out there and get a decision. If you are going to bet him, I would say probably just take the money line bet. I haven't looked at the odds, but I will right now. Let's see what they are, folks.
I think they have Dontell as a dog.
Yep, Dontell Mays is a +230 dog. Thomas Peterson, you get at -285. Again, I will not be betting on this one at all. But if you are, I think the safer bet is Thomas Peterson. Now that I said that out loud, of course, Dontell Mays is going to get like the first finish in 8 years. Nato, what are your thoughts on this fight? Kick me off the damn barstool.
I love it, brother. I will, man. This is going to be an absolute barn burner, right? We got two heavyweights, two dogs going out there. And as long as it's going to last, you know we're going to see fireworks. These two big sons of guns swinging and banging. You got Lord Kong, Dontell Mays, 11-8 record. It's tough. I mean, that pretty much sums up his career, right? It's he wins some, you lose some, and he just really can't build that momentum, which is everything in this sport. Now, going over to Thomas the Train, which is probably the funniest nickname. I mean, I think everyone kind of sees their inner child and they hear that Thomas the Train is fighting in the octagon, but not our traditional train that we're used to. This is Thomas Peterson here. And this is a train that I'm going to avoid getting off. If I see this train on the tracks, I'm getting off the road, okay? Thank you for that. Right on cue, as always. The producer with the most. Man, again, back to reality here. Thomas the Train, he's 30 years old. He's gonna have a slight height disadvantage and 7-inch reach disadvantage against a Dontell Mays. The guy's a freak, but he doesn't always use that size to his advantage. I think if Thomas Peterson can get underneath, just kind of shimmy, you know, willing to eat one, but you get underneath him, you stay inside, you don't want Dontell Mays getting long and fully extended on those 81-inch arms, because that's when people go night-night. I think Thomas will have a plan of action. He moves pretty well for a light, for a heavyweight, excuse me. I would say he moves like a light heavyweight almost. He's so light and limber. Maybe he's a tap dancer or something, but I think the train will find a way to demolish Lord Kong. And yeah, keep on keeping on.
Yeah, I'm with you, man. Like I said, I think Thomas Peterson goes out there and gets it done. He's the more likely person to go out there and get the win. And not a Dontell Mays guy. Not a big Dontell Mays guy. Shout out Miss Mary 616 in the chat. Hopefully Mays worked on his takedown defense. Yeah, I certainly hope so. I certainly hope so. Yeah, one can only hope. Now, with that being said, we move down many weight classes, right, Nano? We're going down to the bantamweight division here for a fight between Gaston Balanos and Li Kang. Nano, I'm actually going to let you take the lead on this one because I'm curious to hear which side you're leaning on here.
I got you, my brother. And I am leaning the dream killer, Gaston Balanos. There is a little tilde over the end there, so I'm going to assume it's Balanos. With that being said, why I'm taking the Peruvian savage in this one, even though he is a slight favorite, so that doesn't hurt in why I'm picking him. But honestly, man, I turn on the tape with these two guys, and Gaston really jumps out at me. Not too many fights here in the UFC. We have had him now for about 2 years, three fights. He's 2-1. His only loss is to a Marcus McGee, who's now a ranked fighter. So that really can't be held against him there, and he made him earn that fight for that. With that being said, but yeah, I really, really like what I've seen from Gaston. The striking pedigree is really, really strong. He has a Muay Thai background, so he's really, really good at that Muay Thai clinch, body locks, taking his opponents down. And again, I was telling my co-host over here before we went live, Gaston Balanos is on track to patenting his very own reverse spinning elbow as like his staple knockout. Like he's that slick with it on his feet. He's gotten that knockout so many times. His last fight in Bellator ended with a spinning reverse elbow. As the announcer was telling everybody, like, this guy, he's known for a spinning. Oh, there it is, a knockout. Pretty cool stuff, man. I'm telling you, I think this guy's special. And as I'm looking at where he's fighting out of Dublin, California. So I'm not gonna go against my Cali boys. Come on, man. You think I'm crazy? Absolutely not. Let's go. But that's not to say that, Quang Bang isn't a tough opponent. He's just really on a tough skid over his last couple fights. He's fought two dogs and Chris El Guapo Gutierrez and Long Zhao in the last year. It was a really tough year for my boy. I don't think he's going to find a way to get it done. I think Gaston is that special when it comes to the striking. Now, you kick me off the stool, my brother. Let the people know how you're feeling about this fight.
Yeah, I just wanted to make sure we're on the same wavelength, and we are, my friend. We are. I mean, this is a wild, wild matchup. Gaston Balanos and Li Kang. Short notice fight. Serious firework potential. Balanos, nicknamed, as you said, the dream killer for a reason. He is a Muay Thai standout. Bellator veteran. Lethal kicks and elbows. Flashy, explosive style. And all of that. And he also carries real knockout power, folks. he is still rounding out his ground game a little bit and his composure inside the UFC octagon. Those are the only flaws I see in this kid. Now enter Li Kang. Li Kang. I'm probably mispronouncing the name. Somebody save me. Stepping in on short notice, representing Vietnam, bringing an aggressive striking style of his very own. He may not necessarily have the same level of tenure, but he's no stranger to pressure. With a reputation for grit and forward movement, it's likely to stay on the feet. And if it does stay on the feet, that's where our guy Dream Killer thrives, right? So I'm expecting Gaston to control the range early, land something sharp, like you said, possibly a spinning back elbow. My gun to head pick, taking Gaston Balanos, a KO, probably midway through the second round. You can quote me on that. I feel like after the first round, he will have found the distance. He'll really start closing in on the range. And by God, he'll be like a shark in the water, my friend. So, yeah, call me crazy. That's my pick.
We're taking the bantamweight finish, huh? I know that was, or was it flyweight? What was the, we ran into
the bantamweight one.
The bantamweight. And hence, we're in the bantamweight division. Would you look at that?
And it's almost a pick 'em. So it's not bad to even just take Gaston and moneyline it. I mean, minus 135 feels like a pretty safe play, my guy.
I like it. Yeah. I would throw that in a parlay or just take it straight up. I think
I was going to say you can parlay that with Ivana Petrovic, right? And if you put like $50 on that, you get 124.87 back. Not a bad deal. Not a bad deal. Yeah, I'm thinking we might have to do like two unit on that one. Possibly.
A couple unis. Never hurt nobody.
A couple units. Yeah, why not? Why the hell not? We'll actually do one unit on that parlay and one unit on Gaston Bayano straight. Yeah, I think that's probably the safer bet. Protect our funds.
Let's do it.
So those are the first two bets of the night, folks. And we move on into the women's strawweight division for a bout between Marina Rodriguez and Jillian Robertson. Man. This is an interesting bout, my friend. This is an interesting one. I'm just going to come right off the gates and tell you I've got Jillian Robertson here. I really, really, really like both women. But I think Jillian Robertson just brings something slightly more special to the table here, right? And what she brings to the table, I'll be honest, it's that grit, bro. It's that suffocating top game. Like, make no mistake, Marina is a high-volume striker, Muay Thai kind of heavy style by the look of her, right? Long, technical, really deadly in that space, but even though she's fought some of the best in the division, I don't know, man. I just think Jillian is a bad stylistic matchup for her. This fight's going to be all about who's able to control the inside of that octagon, and I think it's going to come down to Jillian. If Marina is able to keep it standing, she'll likely be able to pick Jillian apart at distance. Stiff jabs, punishing clinch work, knees to the body in there. But if and when Jillian does close the distance, no, it's going to be bad, bro. She's going to drag it to the floor early and often, and we could likely just see another suffocating grappling performance from Jillian Anderson. Or Jillian Robertson. I am definitely going to take Jillian Robertson here. I think she gets it done via decision. I know her opponent has fought, you know, possibly the more exciting fights, possibly the more exciting opponents. But again, I think stylistically, Jillian Robertson is a nightmare for her. So, and shout out Matua in the chat, leaning Robertson as well.
What up, Matua?
Let's go, my friend.
Good to have you, as always.
PFL on some bullshit right now. I'm not surprised, motherfucker.
What's going on? What update us?
Tell us more, please. Yeah, Bayanos and Lee are so evenly matched. I agree. I do agree. That's why it's damn near a pick'em on DraftKings Sportsbooks right now. So we are leaning Bayanos, though, so God willing, inshallah.
Absolutely. No, I'm on the same wavelength as you, my brother. It's hard for me to bet against a Jillian Robertson who's continuing to get better every time she steps in the octagon. She's starting to get into her prime at 29 years young. She's about as hot and fiery as her red hair is. She's really, really good, man. And she's got all the tools, and she's tough enough. I think that's the big thing in this matchup specifically with the Marina Rodriguez, who I feel in her prime, in her heyday, was one of the nastiest, one of the most violent women I have seen in the octagon. I love her style. Unfortunately, she's 39 years old. How much left is in the tank? And she really, really has proven to me and to the general public that she just doesn't always have an answer for someone that has a dominant grappling / wrestling game. And that's exactly what Jillian has. It's not just in the repertoire. It's not just a card on the table. Jillian is a fantastic wrestler, and it is an advantage against anybody she's in there with, basically on Earth and probably Mars. So I'm also going to lean with you, my brother. I'm taking Jillian Robertson all the way, minus 300 odds is obviously not that juicy. Maybe I'll parlay her, but I do feel good. And honestly, I mean, under two and a half at plus odds, I might even like that because I can see a second or potentially third round finish as Julian is just wearing out a Marina Rodriguez. I think she'll eventually find one. And that'd be a huge win for Julian Robertson. So that's my crystal ball prediction there. And we're going to keep it moving. I'm excited. That's a good one.
I am definitely excited as well, my friend. I do think it's going to be a really fun fight. But again, I just think Jillian Robertson just suffocates. That's what she does. She suffocates. So with that being said, my friend, we move into the middleweight division for a bout between another tough alum, Ryan Loader, a.k.a. Man of Steel, coming in against Azamat Bekhoev, a.k.a. Iron. I mean, again, I've said this before, and I'm going to say it again at least 1,000 times before I die. The matchmakers are just having fun at this point. Iron versus Steel, guys. Come on. Come on, we see what you're doing here. Come on. let's go to the chat here real quick before we jump into the breakdown. Most of the fights have been lackluster standing clinch work. There was one standing guillotine sub and one TKO finish. The co-main event, the lights went out. What the? What?
Oh, no way.
I'm sorry, what?
The overall broadcast package is moving slow. Oh, man. That's brutal.
I mean, that's PFL in a nutshell. That's PFL's biggest problem is the product is not condensed enough, right? It draws on for so long. It's like they don't know the package time they have. And so they end up having so much dead space, or rather space that they're playing the same promo packets over and over and over again. And that's just strange.
Yeah, it's like those Showtime boxing events. It's just they have such long periods between fights, or same with PFL. I mean, if you have a quick stoppage early on, now you have 15 minutes that they just don't have the production for. They don't have that in their repertoire, unfortunately. So I got to appreciate the UFC. I mean, it is honestly similar. I mean, I'm not a huge WWE fan, if I'm being real with y'all, but their production's on point. I mean, they put on nothing but pure entertainment. So. It's levels to this game for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And they're levels ahead of the competition, right? Speaking of levels ahead of the competition, we got Ryan Loader versus Azamat Bekhoev. It's two guys that are trying to make a name for themselves, right? In the middleweight division. You know what I'm saying?
You know how long I've been waiting for this? Who am I about to make a name for myself here?
So Iron Azamat Bekhoev standing across from the Man of Steel. Is a very, very well-rounded fighter, right? 37% of his wins coming by way of TKO or KO, 42% of his wins coming by way of submission, 21% by way of decision. He's only ever lost once by submission and twice by decision. And it was some time ago. The last time he lost was back in 2021 via scarf hold in round three, not a common submission. So not one you'd commonly know how to escape, I'd assume, right? Fair to say. Now, in his last few fights, he's definitely been pushing, right? He got a belt in an LFA, unified belts in LFA, and then defended the belt in LFA before making it into the UFC to fight. I don't know if you want to do like earmuffs here. I know he's your man crush. He fought Zach Reese and just did bad things to him. It was tough. Ground and pounded him out in round number one, and now he's going to fight Ryan Loader. Ryan Loader has a very similar style, right? He's grapple heavy himself. But the thing is, even though he's somewhat grapple heavy, he typically goes out there and gets it done via knockout. Outside of his showcasing in the Ultimate Fighter, he has no submissions, so that doesn't even count as professional record, the one over Tom Theocaris. But he looked really good in the Tough House. And then he comes out and he makes his UFC debut against Robert Valentine and just made it look easy on that Caio Bohalio versus Jared Cannonier card. This is a tough one. I feel like I'm kind of between a rock and a hard place. I also feel like Ryan Loader has fought the better guys. He's a bit of a dog here, right? Is Ryan Loader plus 320. I'm tempted to put maybe like a fifth of a unit on him here, but I could easily be talked off the ledge. Where's your head at with the American wrestling versus Russian wrestling setup going on here on Saturday?
Yeah, man, this is a really interesting tale of the tape for sure. I was a little surprised to see how big the odd gap was, like how much of a heavy favorite Azamat is at minus 410 currently. When I just turn on the tape, I think both guys are impressive in their own ways. You know, I can see why Azamat is probably the betting favorite with the 19-3 record. He's younger. He obviously has more experience, hence the record there. With a win in the UFC against the Zacharys, who's tough, right? That was a really good showing. He does have some power to him. Like when you look at him, like he's a big, strong son of a gun. And with that Russian background, I don't know if he's necessarily known as a big grappler as much as he just like is going out there and dying on his shield. I mean, his last fight was a knockout. He's got a lot of finishes under his belt. All to say, I don't know if it's just the Superman fan in me wanting to bet on the underdog, the Man of Steel, Ryan Loader. Very, very impressive debut. I guess was it for his Ultimate Fighting contract, right? I think his last win was the showcasing the championship, ended up getting the contract, and he won in dominant fashion. Aside from the striking, which I think was pretty solid, really, really strong ground game. And I do think if there's a path for victory for him, it's going to be through the ground game. It's going to be him being able to muddy it up, be slick with his movements, and just not be a sitting target for an Azamat. Azamat is willing to stand there and go tit for tat, see who the tougher guy is, and most of the time it is going to be Azamat. So I think Ryan has come in, even though he's young in his career, 7-1 record. He said he's only been training for 4 years, which is insane to be that good at 33. His physique is insane too. I mean, the dude's waistline is like 28 inches and he's got bigger, broader shoulders than friggin' NBA players do. This guy's a freak. I really, really like what I see from both guys. I feel like it's a little disrespectful, if I'm being honest. I may, to MMA Anomaly's point here, I might sprinkle a little bit on my underdog. Maybe just because he's American. Maybe just because he's a San Diegan, you know, native. Maybe it's because he represents mental health and wants to use his platform for good. He's freaking Man of Steel. He's Clark Kent. How do you not want to root for the guy? Come on, man. There it is. Flex that arm, Olin. I see you, baby. Yeah. So I'm going to Man of Steel here, man. That's it. And if I'm wrong, I will happily do a shot next week. Let's go.
Matua, let's go, my friend. I want to go with Loader as well.
Hell love yeah.
That. And shout out Lazy Bed watching PFL. Hope y'all are good. Dude, we hope you're better. Hope you're having a great time watching PFL, my friend. He also said, Loader was getting out grappled at some points and he had to defend submissions a few times before Loader pulled out the win. You know, you're not wrong, but again, I was impressed with him. And I don't know, man. I just feel like the level of competition he's faced, I don't know if Azamat has faced that same level, even though he has twice the experience, more than twice the experience, right? Give me Loader here. I'm going to sprinkle just a tiny, tiny bit of a sprinkle on this young man. Like I said, I'm going to do a fifth of a unit. So like if your units are $50, a fifth of a unit, $10 gets you 42 back. It's not bad. It's not bad at all. There is going to be one heavier underdog that I'm going to be putting a whole unit on. You can probably guess who it is coming up in a couple fights here, folks. With that being said, we have the headliner of this preliminary card, and we are just blazing through this freaking fight card, brother. It is a women's bantamweight bout between Yana Santos and Misha Cupcake Tate. Man, oh man, what year is it, my friend? It feels like it's early 2000s, like 2010 or something. I don't know. Like,
yep.
What year is it, bro?
It's what's my age again? Yeah, I mean, honestly, this is an interesting one. We got Foxy versus Cupcake, two OGs of the game, man. This could have happened 10 years ago. No, and don't know if you saw me, my brother, but I did pour out a shot here.
I did. I saw you. That's why I followed suit.
Followed suit. Attaboy. Well, you know, and it's like this, man. It's you know, prelim main event here, I guess pre. And it's Misha Cake. It's Cake. I was looking at her. Well, Misha got picked. Jokes. Misha Tate. Might be her last time seeing her. So I'm excited about it. Hopefully she goes out on her shield. Because, you know, legends never die. Legends never die. She fought Ronda Rousey. She fought Ronda. And she is fighting again in 2025. She's a mother.
How to declare.
To declare. She's a mother.
She's a mother.
And she's one of the baddest to do it. She's one of the baddest to do it. I don't know if she's Hall of Fame status. Maybe arguably, you can make a case.
I think UFC needs to, the UFC Hall of Fame needs to open a rivalries wing.
Ooh.
You put John Jones versus DC in there. You put Conor McGregor versus Dustin Poirier in there and Conor McGregor versus Nate Diaz in there. And you got to put Ronda Rousey versus Misha Tate in there. Come on.
That was the original, man. That was the original. And so, you know, Misha's going to come in and have all the class. She's going to come in and have all the heart that you ever want to see. And again, like her opponent, I mean, was on a 3-fight losing streak not too long ago. You know, she lost to an Irene Aldana. She lost to a Holly Holm. She lost to a Carol Rosa. A lot of these girls, I mean, Misha can kind of take some things from each of their game and apply it. I think Misha has a good chance to win, man. She's the Ben favorite. I don't want to make a case against her. It's hard to. Ayana Santos is definitely tough as nails as well, but I mean, got to get some cupcakes, right? I got a little sweet tooth on me. What about you, brother? And I don't know if you want to wait till before or after, but
I'm ready. I'm ready. I feel like it'll probably be better if I do that shot before I hurt you.
Hopefully it's smooth. I'm ready.
All right.
I'm ready to die.
Cheers, folks. Hello. To all of you watching live right now, we appreciate each and every one of you. If you're drinking, raise one up with us. If not, do what you do. We appreciate you.
Salud. Matua's liking the rivalries idea. Might be on to some now.
Somebody clip that. Jamie, clip that. My friend, I know you want to see Misha Tate go out on top. I know you want to see Misha Tate go out on top, my friend. Oh, but I digress. It's not going to happen. I'm going to take a page out of Nano's book today, folks. It's virtually identical fight. Both women are 5'5" tall. The reach, there is a 3.5-inch advantage in favor of Yana Santos. And the age, both women are over 30. Yana is still 3 years younger than Misha Tate. And if we take it just a step further, I got to tell you. And granted, 1,248 people on Tapology have picked, and they have chosen against me here. All right? They have chosen against me here. That's fine. That's fine for those people. Because 25% of us, we think Santos is going to get it done. With good reason. When is the last time Misha Tate beat somebody? It was her last fight, right? Julia Avila. She got a submission in round number 3 against Julia Avila. Her opponent, Foxy Yana Santos, she just beat Chelsea Chandler, right? You know at least one of those names, and I think it's Chelsea Chandler because we just saw her fight last week against an actual contender in Jocelyn Edwards. She also has a win over a Josiane Nunez. She also has a win over a Julia Stolyarenko. I just think the more impressive win as of recent comes in favor of Yana Santos. And I mean, beating a Julia Avila doesn't really do a ton for me because her only win in the UFC was over Pani Kinzad and Gina Mazzani. And those were both over 5 years ago. So it's tough to bet on a Misha Tate in the year 2025, in my humble opinion. She is a minus 142 favorite, possibly for good reason, but my gut is telling me that a lot of those people in the 75% bracket are betting on this fight on Tapology with their heart. And I'm guilty of doing that often myself. Everybody who watches the show knows that. Come on. So it is what it is. It is what it is. I'm going Yana Santos. Am I betting on this? There is just no chance. No chance that I'm betting on this one. With that being said, folks, we have to go on and move into the main card.
It's time
to talk about one of the most exciting fights on the card, folks. It is a lightweight barn burner between Jeremy Little Heathen Stevens and Mason Jones, up and comer, versus Wiley veteran. My goodness. I'm going to let you go on first for this one because I feel like I'm going to ramble on a little bit.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. Then I'll keep it short and sweet, my brother. Not that we're in a rush. We're actually flying by this episode. So much appreciate y'all. It's hard for me to sit here with a straight face and tell you I want the little heathen to go out there and take care of business. I just don't think it's going to happen, man. I love Jeremy Stevens, and he's obviously infamously known for being, who the fuck is that guy? He's that guy. Unfortunately, shout out Conor McGregor there on that one. One of the most infamous moments ever. And honestly, since then, it's been tough sledding for our boy Jeremy Stevens. You even just look at the last time he fought in the UFC. It was 2.5 years ago. Actually, almost, that's not even the UFC. I'm looking at PFL. He went out and fought most recently. But UFC, 4 years ago, since we last saw Jeremy Stevens. And he's been in PFL. He's been at Bare Knuckle. Staying active, I guess, is good. But you're 38 years old. You're taking straight meaty knuckle punches to the face, through the body and through the face again. I just question how much is left for him. I know he's from Iowa, and maybe that's part of the appeal. But man, this kid from Wales is a bloody problem. This guy, Mason Jones, the Dragon, really cool tattoos, pretty sweet name, but really, really talented. I mean, he's the betting heavy favorite right now. He is making his UFC debut, and what a way to debut. You know, then with facing a quote unquote OG or kind of a low key legend, right? A very formidable opponent, regardless. This is big. I think this will be the launching pad for a Mason Jones. He's got a really, really stiff jab, which honestly, sometimes that's all you need. You can't let him get inside. You're starching opponents just by a 1-2, 2-2-1, meats and potatoes. He's got other things in the arsenal, but you know, when you could just lay it up all day and, you know, do little chip shots, might as well, right? When in Rome, do as the Romans do. I think it'll be a really fun one, y'all. Make sure you're tuned in because we're going to be seeing a change of the guard, I believe, in old school UFC versus the new school, the new kid on the block. You could call him Mason Jones. Give me Mason. Dish it off to my boy MMA Anomaly. Give us the dirty, nitty gritty details about this fight. Tell the people.
Man, 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 man. Man, man, this is one of those fights you just love to see, my friend. I am stoked about this one. Matua is rocking with Mason too. Meat and potatoes. We say it all the time, man. We do love a meat and potato style fighter. We actually have a merch for the meat and potato style strikers. Man, I like this fight for a myriad of reasons. Mainly because it's a violent lightweight matchup with firework potential, right? This has got fight of the night written all over it, Nano. Stevens, on one side of the fight, is a certified knockout artist, UFC vet, well over 30 professional fights under his belt here, and he's went out there and made a name for himself in the BKFC realm of things. He's fought a who's who of killers, right? He's taken some bumps in recent years, I get that, but that raw power, that aggression, that experience, that's still a problem for anybody, bro. Anybody. He's the hardest hitting 145er there is. When he hits him, they don't fucking move. That's what he said right before Conor said, who the fuck is that guy? Yeah, no.
Who the fuck is that guy?
Had to do it to him. Had to do it to him. But look, man. What I like about Stevens, what stands out about Stevens, is his ability to, no matter what's happening in the fight, be able to turn it around, with one shot. And it's the same reason I love this sport over NFL, over NBA, over NHL, over MLB, over any other like big five sport in the world. Because look, if I'm down two touchdowns and there's a minute left, I'm pretty much screwed, bro. I can be down 24 minutes with a minute left and still ruin your night. And there's something freaking brilliant about that, bro. There's just something nice about it. I think that's what's going to happen on Saturday, my friend. Look, I get it. Mason Jones is a former Cage Warriors champ, aggressive as hell as well. Very well-rounded, but he's hittable and still working on polishing his defense. He does have a very meat and potatoes style. He loves to pressure forward, but that actually plays into Jeremy's wheelhouse, Nano. If Jones marches forward and keeps his hands down, because you know Jeremy's going to start peppering that body and make him drop those hands, he could walk into something real nasty. I'm taking Jeremy Stephens by KO. He's the more dangerous striker. And if he can keep it standing and laying clean, he's here to remind everyone why he is one of the most violent men to ever do it. This guy is an absolute beast, and you don't even have to be so bullish as to just take him by knockout. You could take him by money line at plus 425. It's hard not to, my guy. I'm going to put a unit on him. If your units are $50, that's 262. If your units are $10, that's 5250 you get back. Either way, I'm putting one of our units on it, and I'm happy as hell about that because I think it's going to hit. Let's go.
I see you. Okay, okay. We're on opposite ends this time. Someone's doing some drinking next week. Let's go.
Someone's going to drink. Speaking of someone that's going to get taken down under, my friend, we have a bantamweight division between Sergey Seedy and Cameron Smotherman. I mean, when your last name is Smotherman, I almost feel like you have to become a fighter, right? And it almost feels like it'd probably be natural course of action for you to, I don't know, become a guy that can submit folks. Maybe makes sense. This guy's only got one submission win. So I don't know. Maybe he just smothers people with them hands because that's typically what he does. He gets that knockout. Of course, his most recent finish was an anaconda choke in Fury FC 94 to get him into the UFC over a Ryan Mandala. And then, of course, once he made his way to the UFC, he beat a Jake Hadley. And he did it in unanimous decision fashion, man. Standing across from him is Sergey Seedy, fighting out of Canada, Burlington, Ontario, to be exact. He's also a bit of a knockout artist, right? 7 wins by knockout. What? That's one more than his opponent, by the way. 1 win by submission, same as his opponent, and just 2 less wins by decision than his opponent with 3. I think Sergey Seedy is the more explosive and more importantly, the more tested fighter here, right, Nano? His most recent win came over our guy, Garrett Armfield, GA, and that was tough to see. But again, very, very impressive win for the guy. I think he probably goes out here and does exactly what he did against our guy, Garrett Armfield, against Cameron Smotherman. I do like Smotherman a lot. I think he has paths to victory here. But there's a reason that Vegas has this one so close, right? Plus 114 for Smotherman. Little slight underdog action. And minus 135 for Sergey Seedy. I'm sticking with the Vegas favorite on this one. I'm not sure if I'll be betting on it yet. Haven't thought that far ahead, but give me Sergey here. Are we hive minding or are you taking the Smotherman?
Oh, man. Oh, man. Oh, man. I think I might be the Smotherman. I like him, man. You know, the babyface killer, something about him just, I like it. You know, I think you were talking about it earlier in your breakdown, which was on point as always. But this kid, Cameron Smotherman, representing Houston, H-Town, stand up, on a 4-fight win streak. A few of those wins were not in the UFC. He did have his Dana White Contender Series debut about 1 year and 8 months ago, lost to a Charlampos Gregorio, who's a stud. You know, that's not necessarily going to diminish too much, in my opinion. But I do like the 4 wins in a row. And the thing with his opponent, Sergey Seedy, that I guess to your point, we're familiar with them. We've seen him go out there and do some good. He did beat our boy Garrett Arnfield, but that was a split decision. Could have argued maybe one person in the world could have changed his mind, and he would have been on the losing side of that. Prior to that, he lost a rematch to a Ramon Tavares via split decision as well. He beat Ramon the first time via knockout, but if he's not starching you, I think he has potential to lose, at least just based off what we're looking at here. Split decision wins, grindy, windy type of opponent. I just think Cameron Smotherman has a little bit more moxie. He's got that aura to him, and he fights with it as well. He's violent. He's looking for the finish. And I think the boomerang back into the UFC was probably the best thing that could have happened to him. You gain some confidence. You gain some additional skills. Just your natural maturation. He's 27 years young. I mean, Sarah, he's 28. So both these guys, we're going to be seeing a lot of them in the future. But for now, I don't know if it's part of just being contrarian, you know, maybe good to have a little yin and yang, but going into it, I was slightly leaning Cameron, but I don't know if I feel good enough to bet on him because Siri has a problem. So that's where I'm at on this one. One of us is getting drunk next week. I know that much. Sheesh.
It's a fact, son. It's a fact. And with that being said, we move into one of my favorite fights here. One of my favorite fights. It's a bantamweight bout between Montel Jackson and Daniel Marcos. My freaking guy. I'm going to take the lead out the gates on this one. I'm very excited about this fight, right? It is a pretty intriguing bantamweight matchup, but at the same time, I feel like I've got the crystal ball in my way right in front of me here, and I can just already see how this one's going to play out. I'm leaning towards Montel Jackson here. Spoiler alert. Jackson's a physical specimen at 135. Freakishly long reach, powerful hands, excellent wrestling if he chooses to use it, which he doesn't have too often. And I know he's had some inconsistencies in the past, but when he's locked in, like your boys, he's a serious threat, okay? His left hand is a heat-seeking missile, and his size advantage is something that makes that all the much more a problem, right? Daniel Marcos is undefeated. I know that. 17-0. He brings a crispy boxing style, lots of forward pressure, but he has not faced anyone with the physical tools that Jackson brings. Marcos can make it competitive. I know that. If he turns it into a high volume striking battle, maybe he can make it competitive with that boxing style. But look, Montel doesn't need volume, kids. He does not need volume. He just needs moments. If Jackson controls the distance, times the entries, and just lands one left, this could be a big statement win. My pick, Montel Jackson by knockout. He's too sharp. He's too long. He's too powerful. And his strikes are too goddamn pretty. And by the way, his hands are also too damn big, Nano. Too damn big. Do you know how big his hands are?
They look huge, bro.
They're bigger. He wears a larger glove than Francis Ngannou.
What?
At a bantamweight.
What?
There's a picture of him holding his hand up to Francis. His hands are larger.
Yep, it's on Reddit.
Bro,
oh my God.
I wish I made that up. John Anik said that fact like last time Montel fought, and I was like, there's no way. And then I found that picture. I was like, there is a way. Oh my God. Insane.
Sheesh. What a
insane.
Beast.
And then shout out to the chat. Best chat in the freaking world, folks. Montel KO TKO at plus 350. Oh my gosh.
Hell yeah, Matua. I like what you're thinking.
Let's go. We got to find that.
Hey, I'll tell you what, though. This guy, Daniel Marcos, is a tough son of a gun. He's a tough son of a gun. It's just one of those things, like Montel Jackson, like his fist, like he is truly the quickest, fastest puncher, I think, in the UFC. I mean, it is substantially faster than anyone he's ever been in there with. And you don't need more than 11 seconds to go watch his fight against Damon, who I think is the man, Blackshear. Motherfucker knocked down 10 seconds, man. Crazy work. I mean, he touches you. You go in a different dimension. I think his fists go into hyperspeed or something. I don't know what it is. But what I do know is that Daniel Marcos is no slouch. This guy has his own variety of strikes. He's a mean son of a gun as well, representing Peru. I like Daniel Marcos a lot. But, man, I'm telling you, it's speed kills. And that's probably all I got to say about that. Speed kills. You got the speed advantage. And you're equally skilled and talented. Not much you can do. I think it's gonna be a really fun fight, though. Don't get it twisted. I think it's gonna be a really fun fight. This is launched up at the top of the card for a reason. Two guys looking to make their name into the top 15. A lot at stake here. But give me Montel Quick Jackson. That is, he's a special, special fighter.
I couldn't agree more. I could not agree more, man. He is a special, special fighter indeed. now, with that being said, we're gonna do another little two-legger for funsies. I'm doing a single on it as well. So I'm gonna do one unit on Montel Jackson to win by TKO, KO, or DQ. Right? That's a cheeky little one unit bet on a +350 odds. So again, if you're playing with $50 units, you put 50 on that, you're making $225 back. Nasty stuff. Got to do it to him. Jeremy Stevens, one unit. Got to do it. Again, 50 on that would make you 260, 250 back. Got to do it. And then why not? Why not string those together for a +2,262 odds parlay here? If you were to put 50 on that, you'd make $1,181.25 whole cents back. So we are going to put one of our units on that. Again, if you're gambling, only gamble with money that you can afford to throw away. We're not endorsing these bets. We are not telling you to make these bets. We're just telling you how we're throwing away money. So we're going to do that. I think that's a fun one. I think that's a fun play. And speaking of things that are fun and people that are even more fun, we got Sav Jelly in the house right now, folks.
Hey. Yo,
shout out, Sav Jelly. Shout out, Sav Jelly. Let's go.
I as well. Good to see you.
With the Dustin Poirier custom doll. Fucking can't get over it. Can't get over it. So sick.
Legendary.
Such a legend. Just like Sav herself. Let's go. Man. She's just in time to hear us talk about the Ponzi scheme. The welterweight division is where we go next for a bout between Santiago, the Ponzi scheme, Ponzinibbio, coming in against Daniel D-Rod Rodriguez. Nano, my fucking guy. Well, you take the lead on this one. I feel like I've been steamrolling through these last few. Tell the people who you have winning this one and why.
This is a fun one, man. This is a fun one. Two guys that we have grown to know in the UFC octagon, Santiago Ponzinibbio, someone that's always, always putting on a show. A lot of fights under his career, 30-8 record. Really involved in the UFC as well. I mean, he does like the Spanish commentary, or I guess color commentary, and helping call fights and things like that. The Argentinian dagger is an issue, man. This guy, and honestly, I feel like this is a really good matchup. Both guys are 38 years old. I'm going to sit here and basically say they both do a lot of the same things. They're both tough as nails. They both can bite down on their mouthpiece, walk their opponents down, pretty slick on their feet, but they're not necessarily like the biggest, best athletes in the world. They just are able to outwork their opponents, and that's something you could definitely admire. His opponent Daniel, aka D-Rod, somebody that, again, love to watch him fight. He's finally coming off a win after riding three losses in a row against all absolute savages, but he did beat Alex Moreno by split decision. And I mean, if I'm being honest, well, actually they both fought Alex, but they both beat him, so that's not MMA math, doesn't really check out there. Is it tough? Is it bad to say I'm torn here? Honestly, my gut is telling me Daniel Rodriguez for some reason. And I'm looking at the odds +102. It's almost a pick 'em. I'm sure that means some money's coming in on D-Rod. I just like the boxer. I like the guy that's a little bit cleaner with the punching. I think Santiago definitely is game for a finish, or can go out there and usually put a whoop in. But when you got someone that's tough in front of him, like a D-Rod, I mean, you could look no farther than the Kevin Holland fight. You know, Santiago got beat by him. A Muslim Salikov, he lost as well. A Michel Pereira, all tough guys with strong, strong hands. I think that might be where D-Rod can potentially find a path to victory. I like my underdog here. That's where I'm going. But I'd be remiss if I didn't say Sav Jelly's going Ponzi. Now I'm scared. No, I should have changed my mind. That makes me nervous. I'm super fucking louse over here, man. Talk to me,
Matu,
man.
Matu is with you, man. Matu and you were sitting on the same fence, my friend. He said he's been on the fence about this D-Rod fight. And, you know, it's a tough fight to pick in. But, I mean, let's talk about it, right? It's a banger in the welterweight division. Both these guys are gritty, tough. They both love a good scrap. both wily veterans, if we're calling a spade here, right? I'm giving the edge, though, slight edge, to the slightly more veteran Santiago Ponzinibbio. Ponzinibbio may not be in his prime anymore, but neither is D-Rod. And he's still a dangerous striker with sharp boxing and nasty leg kicks. And that experience against high-level competition is going to go a long way in this bout, bro. He's also shown that he knows how to dig deep in these wars, and he finds ways to rally when he really needs to. Across from him, D-Rod, Daniel Rodriguez, he's a volume puncher, right? But, and even though he brings that constant pressure, he's been hittable, very hittable in recent outings. And that's risky against somebody like the Ponzi scheme, who can snipe in that pocket, right? If Santiago can manage the pace and stay defensively sound early on, I think he makes this a gritty, wily war. He lands the cleaner, harder shots over the three rounds, and that's why my pick is Ponzinibbio here. The Ponzi scheme by decision. He's got better shot selection and just slightly more firepower when it counts. So, yeah, I like the Ponzi scheme in this one. Let's jump in the comments here. D-Rod hasn't shown me anything lately to make me confident in him. But same with Pond. This is a sketchy one to bet on. I agree. I agree, Sev. I'm not going to bet on this one. I'm staying the fudge away from it. It is damn near a pick 'em for a reason. Santiago is a barely there favorite at minus 122. The man across from him, D-Rod, is plus 102. Staying away from it, Nato. We're staying away from it like the plague, my guy. Staying away from it like the plague. Something I'm not staying away from, though. Something I'm not staying away from like the plague, Nato, is this co-main event. It is a middleweight banger between... It's a little bit of a grappler's delight, but I'm still excited. I'm so excited. It is between Ranier de Rider and Bo Nickel. Not a dime, not a penny, not a quarter, but a Bo Nickel. Oh, Nano, this is going to be a really, really fun fight. My guy. We should pour another one up for this one. Because, I mean, either way, a hype train is getting derailed on Saturday, right? We got two up-and-coming hype trains. Neither have lost inside of the UFC octagon. And, I mean, even though one of the O's is hypothetical or you know, just inside of the octagon for the UFC... Whew, man. You like that, Matua? Barely their favorite? It's an MMA Nobly original right there, my friend.
There we go. Coin it.
Bo Nickel's putting RDR away, sub or TKO.
Wow. Okay.
Wow. I mean, just like the heat that you came in here. I mean, that was this. I mean, if it felt very, like I felt like you typed that with confidence.
I mean, he and then you got
Sab Jelly saying, "I want RDR to win, but I'm picking Bo." All right. Well, cheers. Cheers to hopefully you all hitting your bets if you're betting on this one, and if you're not betting on this one, cheers to you enjoying some good fights and hopefully enjoying this show. Cheers, folks.
Thank you. Salute.
All right. I mean, Matua said, I am very confident in that Nickel prediction. All right. I'm not mad at it. I'm definitely not mad at it. Let's look at what those double chance at victory odds are. Bo Nickel to win via TKO, KO, DQ, or submission. Minus 110. Not bad. I'm tempted. I am tempted to put like a half unit on that or a unit on that, but we'll hold off. We'll hold off for now. Nano, I'll let you give us your prediction on this one first. How do you see this one playing out between the two up-and-coming hype trains, Bo Nickel and Ranier de Rider?
Yeah, I mean, both are hype trains, but different stages in their career, right? I mean, I would say UFC-wise, Ranier de Rider is somebody that has hit the ground running, right? He has captivated the audience. His style is definitely one of one. And frankly, if this fight might have happened 5 years ago and Ranier was 29, as his opponent was, I genuinely think it might be a different conversation. I genuinely think so. Because Rainier really has a lot of threats. Like, he is not the dominant wrestler of Bo Nickel is, right? Like, that American-style wrestling is one of one. That Greco style, it translates in the UFC quite well. But Rainier de Rivera is no fucking scrub on the ground. Like, this guy is nasty. I mean, he got through a GM3, made it look like just a good old-fashioned grappling match. Barely broke a sweat. He beat a Kevin Holland. I mean, that's a big deal, right? That is a legitimate striker. But we all know Kevin really doesn't have that ground game, right? So the question is, does Bo have a true ground? I mean, he has wrestling offense, but does he have grappling offense? Does he have grappling defense? He's going to get tested. And who knows? Maybe if they both end up striking because the wrestling and grappling kind of nullify each other, we see that happen from time to time. Bo might have a better chance. Like, I mean, that's where I think if you're Bo's camp, you're hoping that he's not going to challenge you in that realm. And if you're Bo, I mean, do you really want to take him down? Do you want to give a Rainier de Rivera the bottom position where you might have a couple years in that realm, Bo, right? I mean, maybe five if we're being boastful. This guy's been doing this since pre-K. Okay, this guy, Rainier, has been putting people to sleep since probably Bo was in high school. I mean, this guy's still young. And yeah, again, RDR. I mean, the other thing is just when you start watching some of his story and some of his recent fights, well, not recent fights because he's been beating everyone, but when he is up against a tough opponent, a big, strong guy that can go tit for tat, he's lost. He's, I don't want to say given up, but he didn't get off the stool in one of his fights, in a championship fight at one of his last organizations. And again, at 34 years old, I mean, I think there is a path of victory for him. Let's not make it a mistake. I mean, he's plus 275. If I was a sicko, if I was, you know, a villain, if I were trying to, you know, put bad juju out there, I may sprinkle some of that on there. But no, I'm going the American, man. I'm going Bo Nickel. He's an athlete. He's a competitor at the highest 10th degree. And I think he's getting better every single time we've seen him. I do think in the striking, you don't need as much time for, but when you have a dominant wrestling game, when you can get people in uncomfortable positions, obviously you got to avoid the chokes. But I think Bo will. I think Bo's smart enough and savvy enough at this point in his career to get it done. If this was his first fight, I'd probably say no. There's no effing way. But I think we've seen enough at this point. Real quick, what up, Lane? We see you. And I'll dish it back to you, MMA Anomaly. Let us know how you're feeling.
Great breakdown, Nano, honestly. As always, but I feel like that was one of your better ones, man. I think you took most of the meat off the bone. Like, it's a grappler's dream match, right? Let's just call it spade a spade. Two of the most promising submission specialists, two of the most promising grapplers currently in the division. De Ritter is a former two-division champ over at one. Dynamic submission artist, relentless style, very, very complete grappling game, like you painted, right? His jiu-jitsu is next level. He's not afraid to push the pace or the volume when it comes to the grappling, and he's always looking to suffocate his opponents out there, all the way down to putting the hand over the mouth. The problem, he hasn't faced a grappler like Bo Nickel. He hasn't faced a grappler on Bo Nickel's level. Bo is an absolute phenom. He's a three-time NCAA champion with elite-level wrestling pedigree that's tough to match. He's also one of two Hodge Trophy winners to make it to the UFC. The first one was Ben Askren, who Dana had a vendetta against and waited till he had a bum hip. Bo's the real fucking guy. Bo is everything that we wanted Ben to be, and Ben would have been if he got into the UFC 10 years prior. That's a fact. That's a fact. Folk style wrestling, freestyle wrestling, out the fucking wazoo, brother. Like, he can pull wrestling things out of his ass like a magician pulls a rabbit out of a hat. It's nasty stuff, bro. His top control is scary. His takedowns are explosive. His striking, because of the level of explosion in his grappling, is explosive. He's building his striking. His ground game is levels above a vast majority of UFC fighters currently. His ability to chain wrestle could give DeRidder serious problems. This fight likely comes down to who's going to be able to impose their style first, who's going to be able to, for lack of better words, lead the dance, right? I got to go with my guy, Bo Nickel, and I got to go with him inside the distance. I just think he gets it done inside the distance. If I had to pick a specific way he gets it done, I would say submission, maybe like late in round number two. I think the chain wrestling is going to be a little bit too much. And I also think that his chain wrestling paired with Renier DeRidder's overconfidence in his grappling against an elite level grappler like Bo Nickel is going to prove to be a detriment. He's going to end up giving up his back in a scrambling position, thinking he's going to be able to shrimp his way back to his feet and probably get rear naked choked by somebody like a Bo Nickel or even armbarred.
Yeah. I mean, you could certainly chase something when you're that talented and you're getting your opponent in all these crazy positions. They're tired. Like, it can happen.
And with that, we got to move into the main event of the evening, folks. We got to move into the main event of the evening. It is about between bantamweights Corey Sandhagen and Davison Figueiredo. Man, oh man, oh man, oh man. What are we thinking about this now? Do you have a favorite? Do you have a dog in the race? And if so, is that dog named Scooby-Doo because you're backing Corey Sandhagen?
It's exactly that, right? Ruh-roh Raggy is absolutely correct. If you
Ruh-roh
saw
Raggy?
Ruh-roh. Hell yeah, man. And Waggy, he's totally going to win, man. I'm going with Corey Sandhagen. The Sandman is back. And he's just too cool, man. He's honestly one of my favorite fighters since he came in. His poise, his freaking striking variety, and the way he knows how to just go out there, implement a game plan, and win. And it may not even be his true style. I mean, go turn on that Marlon Chito Vera fight. Dude puts on an absolute clinic every time he's in here. And he's going up against a dog. He's going up against a tough son of a gun, one of the baddest to ever do it in the flyweight division now in the bantamweight division. Davison Figueiredo is a problem. He is a fucking savage. I wish we could have turned back the clock and got a previous version of Figueiredo, but at 37 years old and with a fighter like Corey Sandhagen, who you turn on the highlight tape, you see all the flashy knockouts and cool strikes and big badass back tattoo. But yeah, you don't see the ground game. You don't see the grappling that he's capable of. And again, just fighting IQ, like you got to give that to Corey Sandhagen. That plays dividends at this game, at this stage, knowing what I'm going to do exactly and when and not deviate from it. Corey Sandhagen is the man, but he's not the only man. If you want to know another man, the big dog, I'm talking Ed's dog, MMA talk. What it do, baby? Let the big dogs eat.
Dogs bark in the backyard. Let's go, Sterling. Just ended the watch along for PFL and stopping by to say, Sandman all day! Sandman all day! I already know that's how Sterling would say it. I had to turn up the Sterling energy. Big Sterling energy. BSE, as we say. Speaking of big Sterling energy, I can't wait to see that energy live and jive and in person in June with yours truly, Jive Turkey. It is going to be a hell of a time. Oh, and by the way, Sav Jelly's going to be there too. Let's fucking go. I mean, I don't know if Vegas is ready for that four pack. You add Miss Mary to the mix, and I mean, it's just too much. It's too much energy, folks.
It's gonna be a good time.
We're pouring up one final shot because I mean, when the man, the myth, the legend, S Dog shows up. Come on, you know we gotta represent. Let's go. Let's go, Sav. Yes, party time. I know how to take a shot now.
Shout.
I feel like a proud father right now. Oh my goodness. Miss Mary, are you seeing this? Are you seeing this? Can I pin that comment?
Somebody come look at this.
Look at this. Somebody come look.
Somebody come look at this.
Wait, Western Mass Climber, have you been here the whole time just waiting for us to hit that sound clip? And if so... Let's go.
Do it.
It's one of my favorite sound bites that I have.
Great to have you, Wesley.
Hey, it's Miss Mary. It is Miss Mary. Quite contrary. Western Mass Climber. Yes. Let's go. Sav. Sav.
Got the whole squad on deck. Let's go.
Let's fucking go. Speaking of let's go, cheers to you guys. Cheers to each and every one of you in here. There's about 20 right now, which that number has doubled since the last one we did. So cheers to you all, right? And S-Dogs, Miss Mary, Sav Jelly, Nano, me, everybody else that's going to be at International Fight Week, and the ones that want to be there but can't, we appreciate you anyways. Cheers, folks. Let's go.
Salud.
Let's go.
Oh, it's going down too smooth now.
Okay, that's a funny callback, Miss Mary.
Scoot. Boot Scoot and Boogie.
The Scooter! This chick, Sav Jelly.
Oh, Razor. Vegas. She got the Razor back, huh? The Razor.
She bought the Razor Scooter. She got the Razor Scooter so she wouldn't have to Uber all over the place. And, I mean, she probably saved herself like $500, bro.
Hitting tail whips all down the Vegas Boulevard. Let's go.
Brother, like hiding it behind a bush when she went to the weigh-ins and stuff, so that way no one would steal it. Like true savage stuff, my friend. True savage stuff. Can I ask you before I even give my breakdown on this main event about a random prop bet that I saw?
Yes, you can. You didn't need to ask for permission, but I appreciate your chivalry.
It's just. I feel like maybe I'm just reading a trap, or maybe I'm misreading this.
I can make you rich.
But Rainier DeRitter versus Bo Nickel. Rainier DeRitter to get one takedown, or rather over a half takedown. So yes, one takedown is sitting at plus 450 right now. Like do we really not think Rainier DeRitter can get one takedown? Against Bo,
it's a trap. Right? I think that's all we're gonna. Well,
I think it's just going to be grappling. Because
how long does he have to hold the takedown for to be considered a takedown? Because he can possibly get him, but if Bo does one of those wrestling flip kicks up, and he just has to
get ass to mat or back to mat.
I think he could even reverse something, right? I mean, he's game for something like that.
This is a great question. Does pulling guard count as a takedown? It does not, because you end up on your back. You'd right. have to sweep, and even that wouldn't count as a takedown. So that's why this does feel a little bit trappy, right? Yeah, a controlled takedown. Exactly. You have to get a takedown with top position. Doesn't have to be long for the top position. But you do have to get top position. Otherwise, like a guard pull would be considered a takedown for the other person in most cases, especially in UFC. And then if Rainier DeRitter does pull guard and then sweeps to top position, that still doesn't count as a takedown. It counts as a reversal. So it's tough.
That is tough. But especially if you're of the belief that RDR is going to have a fighting chance, I think one takedown over 15 minutes can definitely happen.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. Even Lane said I'd bet on the takedown, but his money's on over 2.5.
See, like, that's what I'm saying.
I'd almost agree. It's RDR is a legit dude. I mean,
he is.
And so is Bo. Like, Bo, I don't think he's going to make huge detrimental mistakes like that. Like, Bo is a...
Whoa, hold on. Shout out Lane. Level. What a gal. Thank you for pointing out the over 2.5 rounds. I didn't realize that was plus money. Yeah, we will actually be doing both.
I like that. Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, I mean.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah, we're going
to. Yeah, look at Matua with some freaking gold here, too. RDR can get a waist lock and trip, Bo. RDR is still a good judoka.
Yes, he's still a good judoka. Thank you. Thank you, Matua. This is exactly the confidence boost I needed. I'm slamming that bet, bro.
Yep.
Yeah, we're doing a unit on that. I was going to do a fifth.
At least a uni. At least a uni.
I'm doing a unit on that, and I'm doing a unit on the over 2.5, too. So, folks, again, just to, for easy math purposes, if your unit size is 50 bucks, a unit on the over a half takedown, right, is 50 bucks into 275. And the over 2.5 rounds is 50 bucks into 100. A clean bill, as they say. Yeah. I mean, I'm doing a unit on both of those as of right now. By Saturday morning, that could change to two or three units on at least one of these two bets. If they would let me parlay these two things together, I would just rob Vegas tonight, folks. With that being said, I'm looking at you guys now, Lane and Matua. Any good prop bets for this Ming event? Because I'm just not finding a clean way to cut betting on Corey Sandhagen, even though I'm very, very confident that he does go out there and get the win. He's got all the tools to get this done. I think he's the better fighter everywhere that this goes. Definitely a battle of styles, right, Nano? Sandhagen is the more dynamic striker, known for his kind of fluid movement. I would say Sandhagen is a higher volume, less power TJ Dillashaw. Like the way that he moves, the like dipping in and out, leads with his head with his footwork, which is a weird thing that I've only ever seen TJ Dillashaw and Dominic Cruz do prior to seeing him do it. He's tall, he's rangy, he's got excellent footwork, tons of techniques that he can use, spinning back fists, spinning back kicks, flying knees. We all remember the freaking one that hit Frankie Edgar. God rest his soul, man, after that one.
And he felt horrible about it, too.
Yeah, I mean, he felt bad because he killed a legend, bro.
Legend killer.
And Corey's cardio and ability to adjust on the fly, they make him a tough puzzle for anybody to solve. Like, have you ever put together like a 1,000-piece puzzle and there's two pieces missing?
And you don't realize until the end? Half of that, and missing piece. I haven't even gotten to that close, so not, I don't know, actually.
Brother, like me and Miss Mary, one time we put together it was either like an 800 or 1,000-piece puzzle, and we got to the very end, and I think this is probably why we've not tried to put together a puzzle since. There was like two pieces we couldn't find, and I'm like, are you kidding me?
days.
So like
hours on hours.
That's got to be what it feels like. That's got to be what it feels like to fight a Corey Sandhagen, because you're like, weeks, months. I trained for months for this, and I feel stupid.
It's probably frustrating. Yeah, you're whipping air. You're getting tripped. You're getting beat up. It's
like you've been in, like, I know you have not like sparred or done it in the cage, but I know my boy has been in street fights, and I know you know it costs a lot more energy when you're missing the shots you're throwing. Than it is when you're landing them, right?
Yeah.
It's a different kind of energy expenditure, and he makes people miss, and he makes them feel silly. Now imagine how you feel when you do that in a street fight, and then imagine how much more tiring it would be knowing that thousands of people are watching you on TV. Look silly.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, it's a mind fuck to think about, bro. And that's what this guy goes out there and does time and time again. And Davison Figueiredo, I mean, the god of war, right? He's an absolute monster. He's a beast of a human being. But he also just went up in weight class here. He's this smaller guy. And I don't think he carries that same level of power against somebody like a Corey Sandhagen, who's fought the who's who at 135. So give me Corey Sandhagen in this one all day. I just think this is going to be nasty, nasty stuff. Matua said Davison Figueiredo in round three plus 3,300, Corey Sandhagen in round five plus 1,800 from BetUS. Well, that's pretty crazy. It's pretty crazy. I might have to like a fifth of a unit on that just to be fun. Or a fucking tenth of a unit. Western Mass Climber, did the dog eat the puzzle pieces? My dog used to eat puzzle pieces. You know, I grew up with dogs, but these days I have a couple, a few cats. And fuck, maybe the cats ate the puzzle pieces. They've eaten worse things, I'd assume.
Fair. I would assume. Safe assumption.
They kill bugs and like bring them to me as like prizes. They're like, Dad, look at this fucking bumblebee I brought you. I'm like, I'm allergic. That's terrifying. What are you doing?
Kids will be kids, am I right?
You know?
I love it.
Send him 2-3 years Dagestan and forget.
Forget.
That's what you do with kids.
If you want him to be real, you want a real kid on your hands, send him Dagestan.
So, I mean, are you in the same boat here? You're obviously leaning heavy, Corey, yeah?
Yeah, I think so. And the one point I did want to make as you're, you know, going through your breakdown is, I mean, listen, like we get tired. I mean, shoot, I can get out of breath at some elevation just going up the stairs. Now, Figueredo, or how long is Figgy? I like calling him Figgy. Has Figgy ever been known to be a cardio machine? Even at flyweight. Now we're going up. Now we got 25 minutes with the dog who's constantly moving, and you're going to have to be chasing him down. That's not a good recipe right there. I think he will fade probably by that.
I will say Figgy does really well at – sorry to cut in. I will say Figgy does really well at cutting off the octagon space rather than chasing, which is something we saw a huge skill deficit with this past weekend with Carlos Prates failing to do that against Ian Garry, right? Yeah. But, I mean, he did it twice against – Brendan Moreno. One of those fights he severely failed to cut off the octagon, but he definitely did it in two out of three or two out of four of those fights. Brendan Moreno is faster on the feet, but is he as slick as Corey Sandhagen on the with the footwork? I just don't think so.
No, not with all the striking. I mean, yeah, he has good footwork.
He's a weird puzzle, man.
Well, no, he is. No. And that's where, like, I think when Figgy's cutting off the octagon, it's like he's in those situations, he's usually the hammer finding the nail, right? But I think he's used to being the nail. You know, I think that's the only thing there where it's like for him to get to that spot, he'd have to be leading the dance. He'd have to be like applying pressure, which he might be the first one walking forward to start off, but Corey's going to get in his rhythm. And once you start getting sliced and diced up by some strikes, you're less likely to want to be moving forward. You know, you see them kind of doing this sparring, like, oh, I'm there, but I'm not. Like, I don't really want to apply pressure. Again, Carlos Prata is a good example last week. Just kind of deer in the headlights, got really gun shy because you have a dude in front of you that is moving, that is making you think, and can put a hurting on you. It's just too much, man. It's just too much. It's a problem. Sandman is legit. And I don't even know what the word is, but I wanted to say like a nerd, but he's like a true, like, prodigy.
He's just a true martial artist. He's just like, I think that's what you were searching for. Like, he's a true martial artist in every sense of the word. And he'll tell you that, like, there are competitors, there are martial artists, there are athletes. He's not an athlete. He's not, I wouldn't even say he's a competitor. He is a martial artist. He goes out there to see what he is truly capable of doing with his body. And he said it yesterday on the media day. If you haven't watched the media day, guys and gals, I'm planning on cutting a few clips of at least Corey's interviews on that and making some shorts to post up. So that way you can digest those on an easy basis. Cause he said some pretty fire stuff. And one of the things that he said was like, they asked him, or rather they told him that they asked Davison what he thought about Corey doing all the funny stuff and making like the kind of goofy skits and jokey stuff. And Davison, in a very serious tone, basically said, my sense of humor died a long time ago. Now I'm the God of War. I'm only able to go out there and deliver pain. And you know, I want to make people bleed. I'm going to do damage to him. Maybe I passed my sense of humor to him when it died in me or something like that. And they told that to Corey. And Corey's demeanor went from like just smiles to anger instantly. And he's like, cool, I welcome it. Do you know why I love the sport that I compete in? Because I get to go out there and legally do things that no other person gets to legally do. I can't even do the things I do inside the octagon on television inside of training. Because I respect my sparring partners. I don't want to hurt them. Someone telling me that they want to go out there and cause me pain, that their sole purpose is to bring pain to me, bring it on. Because now we're going to go to war. And that excites me. Bro, that's fucking scary.
That's next level.
From somebody like Corey, he's basically saying, like, yeah, I've been a happy martial artist testing myself. Like, you don't really see him get annoyed or upset on the mic. Bro, he literally said, let's make blood. Let's make blood.
Sick.
Fire ass interview from Corey. I know I probably butchered it a little bit, but dude, he's incredible. Sandman is definitely a nerd in the best way. He's a consummate reader. I love his Media Day interview. Oh, dude, I didn't even see this until now. Let's go, Matua. We're hive mining tonight, my friend. We're hive mining tonight, my friend. Love that.
There it is. Matua, shout out.
Shout out, Matua. That person was an air horse. Yeah, the let's make blood comment was fire. This fight is going to be fire. And honestly, this entire fight card is going to be fire. Nano, you have any closing remarks before we call it a wrap?
Hey, you know, love y'all. Appreciate y'all. Wouldn't be here without you. Looking at you too, I'm anomaly. Appreciate you, my brother. Make sure you tune in Saturday. This will be a fun one, right? And if you have the opportunity to relax and you're not working on the weekends, do it, right? Take a second, take a deep breath, take in all that air. You know, regardless of what you're going through, better days are ahead. That's all I want to say, y'all. Appreciate you.
Absolutely. And one of these days, we're going to have to pin down the Jive Turkey himself for a freaking watch along for some of these fights, at least for a main card.
Got some big ones coming up.
With that being said, folks, I hope you all have enjoyed this show. If you're watching the replay or if you're watching live, we'd really, really appreciate it. If you haven't done so yet, like, comment, subscribe, smash that bell for notifications. You know the deal. You know the drill. And right after we wrap up the video, do us the biggest favor you could possibly do. Leave us a comment below. We'd love to hear what fight you're most excited about and also what bet you're most confident in. Let us know those two things below. We'd love to hear your thoughts, and we just love to see your beautiful faces popping up in the display picture or whatever you have as your display picture. Looking at you, Matua. Chama. Now, I'm going to stop being ridiculous and making bad jokes and just say this last thing, folks. If you do nothing else we've asked you to do, I'm going to say it again till the day I die. All that we ask is that you keep on going and you keep on growing, folks. We'll see you next episode.
You've been listening to the MMA Anomaly Show. No filter. As you may have been able to tell, we dig the MMA, and our passion is to dive deep into the upcoming fights, give you our expert breakdowns, and help you make sense of all the chaos that is the fight game. We hope you've enjoyed the show. If you did, make sure to like, rate, and review. We'll be back soon, but in the meantime, make sure to find us on YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, and Twitch at MMAnomaly. Be cool, and we'll see you next time.